The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello, welcome to the Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, your regular host, and in the show I talk to people in the world of integrative medicine for cancer about the latest developments and thinking. My guest today, unusually, is a farmer. Derwin Banks is a farmer with a difference, though, in that he's on a bit of a mission to join the dots between farming and health, something I believe needs doing urgently. I'm talking to Derwin in Surrey. Hi, Derwin. Thanks very much for coming on the show today.
Hello, Robin. Yeah, it's great to be here.
So you distinguished yourself a few years ago by being the only farmer present at the inaugural conference of the BSIO. An unusual position, and that was the first time I met you, I think. And do you think that basically you were in rather the wrong place there, or do you think there should have been more farmers?
Well, no, I don't think I was in the wrong place. Yes, it certainly was interesting. And as I've gone through, I've gone to more different sort of conferences that are on the medical side of things, but also to farming conferences. Particularly the Oxford Real Farming Conference, where a whole group of farmers are trying to think differently about things. Mm. So I kind of have a foot in both camps, which is really unusual because...
It is.
I started now sort of 18, 19 years ago with linseed, and I had got no idea the journey that it was going to take me.
Right.
So at every turn, it seems that, you know, as I learnt things and I was speaking to people and people came into my life and told me more, I kind of learnt much more about things, and I realised that now, going to more of these things, I've met lots more doctors, and more doctors are feeling that food has actually got something to do with health, you know. Come on.
Well, who'd believe it?
So there's a movement there.
Right, and so basically you'd like to see a lot more farmers actually interested in the whole area of health.
I think there is. I think both farming and medical are coming together. They're working on the same direction, but there's not yet much linkage between them.
Right.
So I'm hoping to maybe a little bridge myself, you know, carrying on my own little way, going to things. And I know I was at the Public Health Collaboration Conference in Manchester last year. This year it's going to be in London, mm-hmm. at the Royal Society of General Practitioners. And there was one lovely lady, Joanne McCormack, a GP, and she was talking about low carb, you know, we've got to think about food. And first of all, she thought, well, let's find out what the audience is. So she asked if there were any doctors and nurses and practitioners, and a few hands went up, and she said, oh, that's good. And just as she was going to start again, I said, you forgot to ask how many farmers you should. So immediately she said, oh, how many farmers? And there was actually another guy.
There was two.
Who put his hand up. So
fantastic.
There were two of us, and actually the audience burst out into spontaneous applause.
Excellent.
So I think maybe people do like farmers.
Right.
But, you know, farmers have been tarred with the Range Rover and accountancy brush, haven't they? And actually they've been driven from the land. Mm. All these little farmers have been driven from the land. All the, you know, you only have to look around all the villages. We had dairy herds and cows and animals that were fed in a much better way 60 years ago.
So that's I wanted to go on to talk about that. Basically, you know, over just a few decades, really, in the last century, the food just became industrialised. Basically, that's what you're saying. It got taken away from being just part of the life in the country to becoming an industry. And you know, Western society is bought wholesale into the idea that there's kind of little or no connection between what we eat and our health. Yeah, they're well promoted, of course, by the food industry that liked us to disconnect those two things. That was pretty successful. But changing this direction in a population that's kind of been completely seduced by these addictive, chemicalised foods, turning it around it's a huge task we have on our hands, isn't it? So what do you think needs to happen, and what part do you think farmers have to play in it?
Well, I think you think initially, obviously we came from the end of the war, people were starving. You know, in this country, and we even had food parcels from America.
Right.
And actually where my name comes from, because my mother had something, I don't know whether it was a food parcel or somebody gave her something, but there was a book of names, and that was a free gift, and that's where my name comes from, America.
Fantastic.
But anyway, so we were reasonably healthy then, and people, I think, in the 50s, they were excited, and they'd just been through a period where a lot of trials and tribulations, but people that worked together, so they had a great connection. So gradually, you know, there were you know, scientists experimenting with weed killers, because we came from a time when everything had to be ploughed up and the monoculture really started.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas pre-war there was still a degree of rotation, and you know, destroying weeds by rotation and fallowing. So things had to move, and they say, "Oh, we've got to grow more food." And so farmers, like doctors, actually got sucked into a chemical and industrial world. They didn't think this is going to be a bad thing, you know, this terrible thing. They thought, oh,
this is the future.
This is the future. We're going to get better.
Mm.
And I think now we can look back and we say, you know, this was a really terrible thing. It's changed the biome of the soil, and doctors and scientists are now thinking more about the biome of the gut, and there's these two biomes, and they've got all the bugs and everything in the bacteria. Like in ours, you know, there's more bacteria in the gut than there are cells in the body, and it weighs as much as the brain. And the soil, you know, when you've started to plough up after you had a lot of cattle, you've got loads of worms, and now there's not so many worms, there's not mycelium. People might remember going picking mushrooms. So they grew up every year, and we're just destroying the soil. And in fact, of course, the first antibiotic, streptomycin, came from the soil.
Mm.
So, and they're now telling us, oh, you know, we haven't got any more antibiotics. How about if we looked after the soil properly and farmed it properly? It might well give us all the antibiotics we need at the time we needed it.
Mm.
So it's easy to say now, but I think we've been aware for quite a reasonable amount of time that things are going wrong, and it's led to just disconnection between people. And they thought things were good, no, like they were told margarine is good for them, and flora and Benecol and all those things. They're all industrial fats.
Hmm.
And I'm encouraged by speaking to people now, and it's across the whole social spectrum. You'll say, oh, do you remember how you used to cook in lard or dripping, or your mother? And they realise that, and often people say, oh, I've gone back to butter. You know, we really knew in our heart of hearts that all this other stuff was just junk. So there's a little bit of wake up amongst people, and I'm glad to see that now doctors are thinking more that food might be to do something to do with health.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking to Dr. Rupi Ajula the other day, as we spoke, and he says in America they're actually now teaching in the medical schools about food and teaching doctors how to do it, but in this country we're still behind. So he's beavering away
in the
medical sphere, trying to get more people thinking.
Doing great work,
like him.
So just tell me, so there's a lot of words to, but I'm interested to know what you think farmers should be doing.
Well, I think, I mean, to continue that, really, I think farmers have been totally disconnected. They don't realise they're producing food, they're generally producing commodities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started producing something that I'm selling to people, and I'd learnt about it, and I'm able to talk about it and the importance of fats. And I think farmers have got to go on a big learning curve as well.
Mm.
But I think we've also got to go a step backwards, and we've got to start eating more meat that's produced from grass.
Yeah.
And less meat that's produced in a factory sort of industrial farming environment,
mm-hmm.
because those sort of things are not good for us. So we need to learn a lot about that. And there's no, the idea that we can't produce enough food for ourselves, I think, is ludicrous.
Yeah.
Because we throw away so much. We've just got to be more careful with our food and value it more and start to move the money back. We spent sort of 60 years moving money from little farmers into big farmer with a PH.
Mm.
So all the money is being sucked into trying to cure diseases caused by food.
Mm. It's a great business model, but it's not very good for us, is it?
It's not very good for us.
No. Interesting. I want to talk about a problem that's, because we've had a degree of success in the food area, at least a proportion of people are now much more aware of what good food looks like and are choosing better foods. We have this new problem which is caused by the kind of survival instincts, if you like, of business. Business, once it's there and it's generating profit, it'll do anything to survive. It's like a desperate animal that will do whatever it needs to do to survive. And so we now have this new problem which is called greenwashing, whereas they take a junk food and they say the right things on it in order to make people who actually care about what they buy make a mistake and buy junk. This is a growing problem, isn't it? And what do you think listeners can do to kind of savvy up, you know, with regards to this?
I think what you could say is people are always on about labels. Wouldn't it be nice if labels told you what was in the product?
Yes.
So then you've got to say, well, who's in control of what labels say?
Right.
So trading standards are the last role, and if you do something wrong, then they will be the people that prosecute.
Mm.
So who looks after trading standards? So eventually you'll go back and you'll find it's big business which is pushing the agenda of don't let labels tell you anything that's seriously right. useful to you to work out whether you're healthy or not.
The most obvious example of this going on in America, of course, with the GMO labelling, which they've done everything possible and they're being largely successful to keep the fact that something's got GMOs in it off the label.
Yeah. So, yes, you can see that that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
The other things, I mean, supermarkets are putting kind of spurious farm names on their products, aren't they?
Yes, well, they've been doing that one for a long time, haven't they? They've been pictures of cows on the front of junk food, yeah.
So I think that convinces a lot of people.
Yeah.
Which is rather unfortunate.
Here we are, we want to go out, we want to buy good food. What are the things we want to look for to assure us that we are actually getting good food?
Well, there's the various schemes, you know, there's organic and organic farming and various different bodies that regulate how that works, and things like Red Tractor, and those things can help you have a little bit of an idea, you know, where it's coming from. But I think from my point of view, people love coming to the farm and, you know, they can see the oil being produced and things that we do, and I think that gives them connections. So I think farmers have got to be in the connection business. They've got to learn how to do this because they've forgotten.
Mm.
And we kind of need to reintroduce, if you like, you know, why can't every village have a baker and a windmill? Not that necessarily bread is the best thing for us, but it has been a staple.
Sure.
But it does produce carbohydrate, but it would be better if it's not produced by machines, because you have to put so much junk into it so that it works, so the machine works.
Mm.
Not because you need it in the bread.
Right. Well, I must say, my own leaning these days is much more towards what's been done to food rather than what is the food. I'm less concerned about, you know, whether it happens to be a carbohydrate or a fat or whatever, than I am about the quality of what it is, because I think, to me, that the vast majority of the problems that the population is suffering from is from what's been done to food to denature it and to add things to it that are not food, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And people do it to food themselves. And, you know,
in what way?
Because I produce my linseed, I'm interested in fat.
Yeah, okay.
All in fat. It's the most fundamental building block in your body.
Right.
So it's really important. Your brain is 60% fat.
Right.
It's the raw materials for all your hormones. The whole thing is based on really good fat going into your system. And they knew about this in the 20s and the 50s. You know, there was a German scientist called Otto Warburg that was working on oxygenation of the blood. And if your cells are not sufficiently oxygenated, you're likely to get cancer. He actually said that. And later on, another lady, Joanna Budwig, another German scientist, these are scientists who were not paid by the pharmaceutical industry, said, it's the fat, stupid, and it's making margarine and it's cooking with oil. And we had no tradition of cooking with oil in this country. Everything was cooked in saturated fat. Yeah. It was likely to be fat from animals that were produced in a better way, so it had all the... When animals eat grass, they produce omega-3 in their systems. Mm-hmm. So if you keep feeding them the byproduct of making soy oil and corn and maize and all that kind of thing, you interfere with that fatty acid balance. Therefore, it interferes with our fatty acid balance. Mm. And it's not just a little bit.
No.
It's huge amounts. I mean, we're kind of still Stone Age people who are meant to have a balance of one to one on the omega-3, omega-6 range, and that's probably most people have heard of those type of fats, and we're now in the region of 1 to 15, 20, and the Institute for Feeding the Brain for Behavior thinks there's a great deal of the population might be having 50 times more omega-6.
Wow, really?
So you know, that's a big problem. And because we had no tradition, when the oil started to come in big ways, people were told that it's better to cook with that than saturated fat.
Mm.
And that was a big fat lie, because it changed the structure of the oil, so it didn't work properly in your body. Mm. And you can, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to, you know, 60 years ago, 1 in 20 people were getting cancer, now 1 in 2. So you've got to say, what could have possibly have done in that really short time, of an eyelid in our evolutionary process? What can you have done? And the answer, I think, to me, backed up by science, is we've fooled with the fats.
Mm. Okay, well, I'd include, I mean, you focus in on fats, obviously, because that's your,
other things,
your world, but I say across the board with food, you just need to look at any food. It doesn't matter what it is. Some food scientists have decided we can make this shelf life longer, we can make more money by doing this, whatever it is. Yeah. And that thing, whatever they've done, has never been for the benefit of the food. It's always been to increase profits. Completely the wrong target, basically, is profit rather than people, which is the problem in medicine as well, that it's basically for profit.
But so what we've really got to do is we've got to move the money from those people to a different set of people who want to keep you well.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's not, it's not going to make the country poorer if we're fitter and healthier people.
No, anything but.
You know, you imagine that, no doubt the Victorians had their problems, but they had people in the past who were vibrant and alert and went out and did things or colonised America or whatever they did.
Mm.
They were fit people. Mm. And recently we've been hearing people saying, it's only wealthier people or more middle class people that can take advantage of nutritional advice and eat well. It's my experience that across the social spectrum, there's a great deal of misinformation that people have. They don't know much about oil and fat.
Mm.
And you know, I've talked to people across that spectrum, and I'm pretty sure that all of those, when I talk about the you know, what did your grandmother cook with?
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh, yes, we've gone back to butter, that kind of thing.
Mm.
So I think it's really demeaning to cast people at the bottom adrift, because we had really strong people in the 50s. We had loads of people working on the land, coal miners, shipbuilders. All these people were strong people. And now we've seemed to have a lot weaker people.
Mm.
You know, working on the land, it was hard. It wasn't necessarily unhappy. I think we all of our young life on a small family farm, it was hard work with virtually no money, but it wasn't abusive or anything like that.
Mm.
But it led me to make a million ideas, and that's probably why I'm sitting here today with you, Robin.
Right.
Because I, you know, I think, and how can I make this small farm make any more money to support us?
Yeah.
And that led to a number of failures, but I only needed to have one success.
Yes.
It hasn't made us a fortune, but it's given me such an insight into things. And
right.
People now, you know, I get phone calls from people and they're almost talking to me like a doctor.
Right.
It's quite ridiculous, really.
Well, it's interesting, and it's a good development, I see it.
I think it is.
Because you are an expert on your particular field there, for sure.
Well, I think, yeah, I hope if I've got anything, it's the ability to kind of make it simple for people, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we need.
Okay, I wanted to ask another important connection between farming and health. Is, of course, what farmers do in our name and to the environment. In fact, they're doing it to our environment. We all live in this environment. And so, of course, if they are an organic farmer, that's doing one thing to the environment. And if they're an industrial farmer, that's doing something else to the environment. Of course, there's a lot of difference between those two from everybody's point of view, not just the farmers, isn't there?
There is a lot of difference. And I think there are a lot of conventional farmers that are thinking differently as well. They're maybe doing minimum tillage, things mm-hmm. like that, and they're not ploughing up things all the time. And they are kind of waking up. So I think we are where we are. And I'm a sort of consensus person. I don't want people to say, oh, you're absolutely doing the terrible thing and we've got to impose something on you. I think it's far better to be talking, and that's why I want
people to understand.
To understand, yeah. and you know, get farmers and doctors talking. They've got the same interests at heart, the same interest to help heal people and cure people. So I think we are where we are, and we've got to utilise the best things from both kind of worlds to get there. Obviously, in the end, you know, if we can do everything organically and biodynamically, that would be great. It will need more people working on the land and a fundamental shift to smaller farmers and getting, you know, manure and things back onto the land, a proper rotational system going on, and farmers being rewarded for that. And Gove, Michael Gove talks about paying farmers for good. Well, the most fundamental good could be producing food that keeps people healthy.
Absolutely.
And actually teaching people about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got a bit to do there. I don't want any confrontation on here. And,
no.
And confrontation sometimes would be bad. You know, people, first of all, they say, oh, you know, it's all the chemicals we spray on everything. Well, when I kind of read a little while ago about starlings who lived in a sewage works, and they lived part-time there, but when they analysed them, they found they were all on Prozac. So Prozac was not occurring naturally. So what it does show is actually our bodies have got the ability to pee all this out.
Right.
And you can imagine all the other drugs and the cancer drugs and everything else is going out. I think our bodies
are a testament to what it can do. I mean, look at all the things that we actually do put into our bodies. The fact that we're not sick every day is absolute miracle.
It
considering
is a miracle.
What we do to ourselves.
Yeah.
Incredible thing, the body. Yeah, I would agree.
You know, don't get too fixated on that.
Okay.
But you know, the fundamental thing I think we're doing is fooling around with the oil, and that really is important.
Mm.
And you know, from the point of view of women, that often when they get pregnant, young women, they talk about, you know, baby blues or baby brain.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't eat the right fats, their brain can shrink
really
by 20%. And omega-3 is actually the only substance in a human body that when a woman is pregnant, the baby will take all of that.
Mm.
Because nature is only interested in new life, not so much the host. So right. that's what happens. The only substance. So that can lead to problems straight away. So you want those really good fats going in. And you know, from the point of view of a farmer, I knew that when we used to feed our cattle linseed oil cake, and their coats used to shine, and they're more fertile, and they give more milk. And that's the same for mothers, human mothers.
Right.
Get some linseed in their life, they're likely to have a calmer child. They're less likely to have mental problems as a result of
depression,
not having the right fats coming in.
Mm.
And they'll give more milk as well, and hopefully without so many problems.
Right.
And when you think that, I think a little while ago they were saying there's 270,000 mistakes made in that natal area when women go to hospital. In 2 years, that was. Yeah. That's one in five having a problem.
Wow.
And there's more, the most area of compensation that National Health Service pays out is also in that natal area.
Is it?
So it's huge. And I say, that why aren't we thinking of women more like sheep?
Well, it may not be politically correct. But,
and ourselves, I mean, as a farmer, if one in five of our sheep had a problem during lambing, we'd be jumping up and down. And what we do is, before they're ready to lamb, we check their condition score, that's the fat.
Right.
And if they're a bit too fat, they go into a pasture where they haven't got too much. And I think, wouldn't it be fun if we could actually get couples thinking like that, say, oh, is it right, okay, we're going to check our condition score this week. Oh, you're a bit too fat, maybe we should think about changing our diet and something.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could be in a better condition, and there is a huge problem with a lot of women who can't conceive, you know.
Mm.
Big issue.
Yes.
It might be very simple.
It might be a lack of health, basically.
Lack of health, and lack of the right fats, lack of the right understanding.
Mm.
But let's make it fun. Because people have it's a great deal of difficulty for people to change their diet. So
we've
got to have a lifestyle change, and we've got to have a bit of fun doing it and encompass a bit of a new way of thinking.
Mm.
Does that sound a bit bonkers?
Well, it's unusual. Anyway, different. And yeah, why not? Okay, look, you mentioned earlier on, you talked about the soil microbiome, the gut microbiome, and the gut microbiome is big news, obviously, in healthcare. Both this is conventional healthcare and integrative healthcare. Every time it's mentioned, it seems that more things are attributed to the health of the microbiome. And, as you say, there's beginning to be more of an interest in the what's going on in the soil. And you're seeing one of your sort of missions is to actually join these two together and say actually the health of one and the health of the other are actually directly connected. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we're it's all linked, and talking to each other is a good way forward. And I guess maybe I've met more doctors more recently than farmers to some extent.
Right.
I know they're changing, and I know some of them have found it really hard because when they start thinking differently, they're moving away from the conventional thought. It can cause a problem for them amongst their colleagues. So you can understand that can be difficult, so hard to say what to change. But I think now there's more and more people thinking this way, so I think that it's becoming less difficult for doctors to imagine.
I agree,
that
yes.
Food can somehow go along there. So, I'd love to sort of be alive 30 years from now thinking, yes, does this huge change happened, and we really are, doctors and farmers working together for health.
Mm.
And we've changed things, I think that would be really great.
Right, and so, you're talking about the environment for doctors to actually embrace something new. It actually is improving. And some of the characters like Dr. Rupi Aujla, you mentioned before, and Rangan Chatterjee on TV are helping enormously with this kind of thing, I think, actually being out there in public.
They are.
Demonstrating how they can make people better with food. Is an enormous thing. It's very important, isn't it?
It is. And Joanne McCormack, who I was talking about, who spoke at the Public Health Collaboration Conference, she had looked at the NICE guidelines and the GMC guidelines and had found in there various statements that supported what she was doing.
Mm.
Patient-centered.
It's all in there.
And looking after. So she felt that she's safe from being criticised and hasn't been struck off yet because she's doing things that can be read into the guidance, which is really, really brilliant.
Well, absolutely. I've looked at all that stuff as well. And Yes to Life is doing exactly what it says in the NHS Charter. we are. We're actually delivering patient choice, patient-centred care. We're empowering patients to make their own decisions about their healthcare, which is what the NHS is meant to be doing.
Yeah, but it needs a brain transplant, I think.
So it needs some encouragement, let's say.
Well, yes, all right.
Yeah.
Now, I think 1.1.1 and 1.1.3 she mentioned in the NICE guidelines. Look those up, I think that'll...
Okay.
That gives you comfort that you're doing the right thing and you're not going to come into conflict with the authorities.
Yeah. So, curiously enough, in all of this, the most backward area of healthcare seems to be cancer. That's... this is a programme about cancer, so I want to bring it around to that. For some reason, the area of cancer care is the most anti-nutrition. You know, most people who are given advice, they ask their oncologist, and what can I do to help myself? Is there something I can do in nutrition? Will be told that it doesn't matter what you eat when you have cancer, and will be actively encouraged by a dietitian to eat lots of calories to keep up their weight. And so that... actually, they will steer them towards what are effectively junk foods. Now, considering that the people with cancer are some of the sickest people we have, from our mentality, this is like completely nuts, but why do you think that cancer is at the back of the queue with nutrition, and what can be done to change that?
The biggest hurdle, if you like, is an Act of Parliament called the 1939 Cancer Act.
That's got something to do with it.
And that actually says there's only three things an oncologist can do. It can operate on you, give you chemotherapy or radiotherapy. And that is a real hurdle. And 1939, hey, we've learnt a little bit since then. Surely we could modify that to have a more integrated approach to healing. Secondly, I was at a two-day international conference in December, and these are the big thinkers on cancer. It was run by the Nutritional Society, all over the world, professors from colleges and universities and doctors. And they are thinking about dietary responses to cancer and survivability, how survivability of cancer can be improved by looking at your diet. And I think it's pretty well known with amongst people that think that way that... cancer drugs are pretty detrimental to people. It's like a nuclear bomb going off. They've made some progress, but when you actually look at it, they don't talk about healing. They talk about how long you're going to survive. And quite a number of different kind of cancers, they haven't increased the survivability very much.
Mm.
But what came out as a result of this conference, which I was able to participate in, and I was the only farmer there, and people were interested in what I was doing and talked to me, so that was really great. But what will get you through this is keeping up your muscle mass and exercise. And what they were saying there, one lady in particular, is the most nutritious and food and densely packed with everything you need is, of course, meat and dairy products from pasture-fed animals. So in a small amount of food, you can get lots of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually came out because there was a guy from Imperial, professor from Imperial first, and he spoke about things that would be causing cancer and actually put meat and dairy products and processed meat and everything all in one group.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, this is really confrontational because of what we're talking about, farmers thinking about how to produce better quality food and things from the land.
Yes.
And he talked about that for such a long time that nobody else had a chance to answer a question.
Right.
But a lady then from Canada, I asked her a question and she said, I've been thinking about what you said about this. And then she said immediately that, you know, about the meat and dairy products being densely packed with all the nutrients you need. So you can't have somebody on one side saying these are cancer causing and then somebody else on the other side saying this is what you need to eat to keep your muscle mass up and keep your strength up. So, you know, those are the sort of things that I can do. And the president of the Nutritional Society came up to me at one point and he said, I love your questions. You get up and you tell them your name, you say you're a farmer, and then you ask them something that I have to think about. So, you know, I think I can do that because I don't I was going to say I don't care, but I do care.
You do care, but you're not part of what they're engaged in. There's a certain perspective you can get from outside, in a way. You're part of the food process, but you're outside of healthcare in that kind of way. And so you don't necessarily have a sort of tunnel vision that they might suffer from.
No, I've kind of been drawn into it from an amazing direction.
Yeah.
And, people... I was talking to a while ago about people talking. I think talking is part of healing.
Mm.
And I think that's why people seem to be happy to talk to me. You know, they might tell me more than they tell their doctor possibly on the phone or something.
Mm.
So healing is not just one thing.
No, it certainly isn't. And there's something in what you just said there that sort of takes me back to an earlier point, is that obviously we're buried in evidence being produced these days, huge amounts of human effort going into producing evidence. And so much of the stuff that comes out into the public sphere can be very contradictory, and it doesn't even seem to make sense, a lot of it. But it seems to me, I said earlier on, I'm much more concerned about what's happened to the food than what the food is. Well, they don't tend to discriminate between, a peach that's been organically grown and a sliced thing out of a can which is produced in a factory. You know, it's all peach to them. Yeah. You know, there's very little discrimination. So when they do a trial where they're looking at meat, well, is that meat laced with hormones and all that stuff? I mean, where does it come from? That seems to me far more important. Why don't they do a trial which says, well, okay, we've got one lot of cancer patients who are eating a good diet, what I mean by a good diet is an uncontaminated diet, and people who are eating a diet that is contaminated, it might be exactly the same diet, but it's contaminated, and to compare those two, because that's a lot more interesting. But of course, it's not of interest to the business that makes the contaminated foods.
There's not much money in that, but interestingly, the Penny Bronze Centre,
yes,
down there in the late 80s, there were people, or women, being treated for breast cancer, and they were coming along to the Penny Bronze Centre, and at one point they said, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I think it came from the hospital, wouldn't it be nice if we compared how those women that went to Penny Bronze and were looked at, gave even helpful advice, to ones that didn't. And they did that, and they gave the women little questionnaires, not very comprehensive, a lot of tick boxing, not much you could write about. And apparently, at the end of the first year, I think something was leaked to newspapers, and the headlines were kindness kills people, that kind of thing, And there was a whole thing produced in the BMJ as well about it, but eventually there was a whole lot of women, and I met one of these women the other day, or I've met her several times at these conferences, and actually on other occasions, and last time she gave me her book, which we called Fighting Spirit, which was the story of some of these women.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely incredible, and she was one of them as well. And anyway, eventually those women created such a stir that the charity commissions got in the two cancer charities that had been working on this, and they hadn't got any oversight on it. They didn't know what sort of patients they were. They didn't know whether all of these women that came to the Penny Bronze were just given up, you've got no chance, that's it. They didn't know what the control group were. And so they got criticised, and that made it, that was the start of some changes in how you produce trials and so on.
Well, that whole thing was had a complete agenda, that thing. It was driven by quack busters who wanted to actually derail that process going on over there of natural food being used as medicine. And they nearly succeeded. They nearly took out the whole Bristol Cancer Care Centre at the time.
Yes, it
nearly disappeared completely because of that headline. There was a BBC programme about it as well, where they, bared all before the world and showed them how they were killing people there. And the whole thing was a hoax. Basically, it was completely unscientific and was designed to destroy them.
Yeah.
So,
that's the women's stories, women were saying that they felt they went to the, with their cancer care, and they were just looked at as a breast with a lump in.
Yeah.
And they're not considered as a whole woman.
Right.
And, I've talked to them as well, and about, it was the mammogram that killed my sister because it hurt her. And some of these women talk about that as well, and I've had conversations with some of my customers about that. And, you know, some are saying, oh, you know, they think they're pretty gung-ho there. You know, they think they're doing the right thing, and, you know, they're putting all this weight.
They're being told they are.
And they're just hurting these women.
Mm.
And it's a barbaric thing to do. Totally. And there are other things, other better ways, including training dogs.
Yes, including training dogs. Yeah,
but,
that's another program.
This. And we want to treat people properly.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. So we have to steer our way through all this stuff, and a lot of the science has been paid for, or it's science with an agenda. That's the problem. It's good science as well, but it's very difficult for the public to know what's what out of all this. If you read the headline that the Bristol Cancer Care Centre is killing women. Basically, you know, well, it can look very respectable. This is good science, and it's the trial's been done, and it's shown. You know, it's very difficult to navigate all this stuff. And for myself, I've begun to, in a way, I mean, science is always very interesting, but at the end of the day, I apply a simple thing which is called common sense. So it seems that nowadays we need to have science to prove common sense, but anyway, nonetheless, when you make your own healthcare decisions about yourself or your family, you know, if you take the advice of an expert who your common sense tells you is not talking sense, it could be devastating, the consequences, and that practitioner won't pay the price. You will, or your family will. So personally, I set a lot of store by common sense. If something actually doesn't make sense to me, I'm going to be very suspicious of it. And how much do you think that the public should rely on their own intuition, if you like, and common sense to guide their health choices?
Well, yes, I mean, Robin, you with Yes to Life, that's been the philosophy of Yes to Life, and to try and demystify some of this, because you're faced by millions of information on the internet. If you, whatever disease you put in, you get tons of stuff back.
Yeah.
And what's good and what isn't good. So I'm not sure quite how you get out of that, except by saying this common sense thing. Start buying food. I mean, the food is the major thing as far as I'm concerned. And we talked about doctors. I think it might be easier to some extent to train doctors than it is with farmers, because farmers have just become so industrialised, and they're so big, they've got so many big machines, the whole money thing is all geared to that. So we are chipping away. I mean, there was 950 delegates to the Real Farming Conference this year in Oxford, and 300 to the corporate one. So
really, it's moving. So tell me what real farming is. It sounds good.
Well, real farmers certainly believe in the health of the soil, and
okay,
and doing things in a better way and producing food that's healthy for people. But the talks I've done there, I've tried to try and link food and health, and I think that although they're thinking about that, they still haven't actually got kind of complete message of the importance of that food or what it needs to be.
Mm. Well, that's very interesting, because of course if they want to be successful, they need to connect to the shoppers, the people who are, so it's no good being the farming community over there doing a separate business. They need to be the shoppers' food supplier, the person who makes the healthy food, supplies the choices that the shoppers want.
Yeah.
So you know, that connection really needs to happen, doesn't it?
It does, and to some extent it's happening a little bit. The supermarkets are all having to think, and they've of course produced little corner shops, if you like, haven't they?
Yes. Because
people are no longer going and buying the great big trolleyfuls. So you know, I kind of look forward to a time when their power is diminished somewhat, and people are using their own economic power themselves to go to farm shops and, you know, just generally learn a little bit more food and eat food that's healthier for them. And it doesn't mean going to a health shop you're going to find 100% healthier food. You've still got to
ease your discrimination,
look at how things are produced.
But I think you're right. I think that has happened to quite an extent, and the interest in quality food is soared, really. You know, starting with the slow food revolution in Italy, you know, the choice, if you like, now of food from small producers in this country has really gone up.
It certainly is a lot better, but of course we've had our time stolen from us, so we haven't got time to do that. But to go back to, we were talking about healthy people and strong people. Mm. You know, poor people actually ate a lot of offal. They boiled up bones from these cattle that were produced in a better way. And that contained all the nutrients.
Yeah, that's not available. They're the ones who are buying the cheap junk food, unfortunately, now, because that's what they can afford.
Yeah, but really, they needed the time to prepare that kind of thing. And I remember Mother boiling up bones, of course, and lots of her own produce, obviously, on the farm. Mm. So,
okay, well, look, we're just about out of time. But you have got an event coming up, I know you'd love to tell our listeners about.
Oh, yes, I have got an event. And this is for people who are actually using our oil to help them heal or keep them well. And it's people with MS or who are using the Gerson therapy or the Budvig protocol. So we're having an event that just can come to the farm, they can see the oil being produced, they can learn a little bit more about the oil, see my museum of things to do with linseed and flax, and actually learn why they should be calling the oil linseed oil and not flax oil.
Okay.
That's those Americans, they're kind of confused over that. So I learned about that. And it's going to be a day, you come up lots of, 10:30 or so in the morning, have some coffee and meet and chat to each other. And then I take on a tour of the oil being processed, and we go back up and have a talk about that and a lunch of some description. And I've got somebody coming who's going to do some tapping with you and that kind of thing. And you need to go to Eventbrite, go onto our website, click on events, and that will take you to the Eventbrite page, and then you can book in. We're only charging about £15, which is not many cups of coffee. And that's the third Saturday in April, I think.
Third Saturday in April, and your website address is
www.thelinseedfarm.co.uk.
Great. All right. Well, I'm sure plenty of people will be interested in that.
I hope so.
Well, thanks very much. It's great to have somebody doing something really unusual. You know, this whole effort at connecting farming and health is, you're quite, as you said, you're quite often the only person there doing it. But it's got to start somewhere. And so brilliant you're doing it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you very much indeed. I think we've probably got about another 3 or 4 programmes if we want to get through all of it.
I think, I think you're right.
In his quietly persistent manner, I do believe Derwin is having an impact by coming at issues in healthcare from a farming perspective. In the interview, I referred at one point to the NHS Constitution, and I thought you might be interested to hear what paragraph 4 of the principles that guide the NHS says. The patient will be at the heart of everything the NHS does. It should support individuals to promote and manage their own health. NHS services must reflect and should be coordinated around and tailored to the needs and preferences of patients, their families, and their carers. Patients with their families and carers, where appropriate, will be involved in and consulted on all decisions about their care and treatment. That's just a part of paragraph 4. The whole document is worth a look at. But it'll be a great day when oncology looks anything like this. I'd like to give you a date for your diary. This one's well in advance, on Saturday the 6th of October in Victoria Park. You need the time to get yourself in shape because it's the Yes to Life 10K run. So it's Saturday the 6th of October. Also wanted to let you know that we've just finished filming our next 6 recipes under the Food for Life series. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Yes to Life, at bit.ly/foodforlifeseries. That's bit.ly/foodforlifeseries. Thanks very much for listening today. I hope you'll be able to join me again next week. Goodbye.